The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast by Fresh FM, with the assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Hi everyone, I'm Claire Williamson and you're listening to A Little Bit Booked on Fresh FM. One of the questions I get asked most often is, how many books do you read a year? And the answer is usually some variant of a lot, many, heaps, over 100. But this is both because I genuinely love reading and always have 2 to 3 books on the go, but also because there's just too many books that keep getting added to my TBR. But reading isn't a contest. There's no prize for reading, quote unquote, the most books or the newest books or all of the latest books from BookTok, Bookstagram, the internet. And sometimes what we all want and need is a book that we're already familiar with. An old friend, something you can dip into or out of without pressure. And there's a lot to dive into with what makes a book rereadable. So here to help me with this conversation is Fraser McDermid. Fraser works at the British High Commission on Trade Policy, but his true love is reading. He posts reviews and other book-related content on @turnsof_FRAZE, which is a great pun. He mainly reads literary fiction, but is always keen to expand his palette to other genres. And on top of all of this, he's also worked in Treaty of Waitangi negotiations and has a doctorate in theology from the University of Oxford. Hi, Fraser. You're very well qualified.
Thanks so much, Claire. It's a pleasure to be here. I can't wait to talk about books with you.
So I know we're going to talk about what makes a book rereadable and maybe some of our go-to rereads, but what's new that you've been reading recently?
Well, actually, it's a book that you recommended, Claire, because when we were having a little pre-chat, we were talking about books we'd like to reread. And you mentioned that I think maybe your all-time favorite or the book that you've certainly reread a number of times is Watership Down.
Oh, classic.
And it's a book that I definitely heard of the title. I think maybe it's a film as well. I'm not sure.
It's a notorious film that's known for traumatizing generations of young children. I have not seen it.
Well, yeah. So I was like, I've got to find out what this is. I didn't know it was about rabbits. I now know it's about rabbits. I'm about a quarter of the way through. And actually the copy that I've got is really exquisite, kind of larger than normal fiction book size. It's kind of a square and it's a fully illustrated edition. And it's kind of amazing. Yeah, we've got these like cute rabbit illustrations. There's also like very sad rabbit illustrations that I'm coming to understand. There's a lot of sadness coming. So yeah, that's what I'm in at the moment.
I'm very biased. That's a very good choice. I had a friend send me a message after they saw that you were reading it on my recommendation, and their quote was, "That book is Depression City," which I think is slightly harsh. But yes, there is a lot of melancholy maybe.
I mean,
in it.
So far, no one's died. I feel like that may change. I get the sense, like I'm only a quarter of the way through, so there's a lot to come still. But currently, they've just reached Watership Down.
Yes.
On the sort of safe place. They've been in the spooky burrow with the other rabbits that are weird, and now they're in a happy place by the sounds of it. So maybe I should just stop there.
Well, we could talk about that book a little bit more because I've made some notes about what's always intrigued me for it. But I grew up on the like cheaperish B format trade paperback with the yellow cover. So that's the one that I think of. But I desperately want a fully illustrated version.
It's pretty good, yeah.
So how often would you say you reread books, generally speaking?
Generally speaking, not very often. So I think I was trying to have a think about the number of books I've reread. And this is, I'm kind of excluding academic books because I definitely reread a number of those for my studies and stuff. But I'm thinking more about fiction. And I think I can probably count them on one hand.
Okay.
Honestly. Which maybe makes me not a very good person to be talking about rereads with you. But on my rationale, I think, or the reason why I haven't reread a bunch is really because I feel like there are so many books out there, and I also read a lot, you know, like I'm hungry for new stuff. I love reading new authors. I love reading debut novelists. So in a way, it feels to me kind of a shame to reread, because I know what the book's about. I know what I felt during it, you know, during reading it. So I'm kind of, you know, it's kind of an opportunity cost that I could be reading something cool and new and something I've not read before. I mean, that could actually be a classic. It could be something that's hundreds of years old, but just something that I'm not familiar with. But yeah, happy to go into what I have reread, because there's some pretty interesting.
What have you reread?
So I think the three books that I can confidently say I have reread have all been because my book club or a book club that I've been in has done the book. Usually at my suggestion, because I loved the book in the first place, and I was like, let's talk about it with other people. And I think the book I first reread first was The Remains of the Day by Kazuo Ishiguro, which is probably, you've got it there.
I've got it here. The book I started on your recommendation.
I love that we're just mutually recommending stuff. That's great. So that The Remains of the Day is probably in my like top five books of all time list.
Ah,
I think it's just exquisite. Short, punchy, super eloquent, and so it just pulls on so many heartstrings. So I recommend that to my book club. I think it was 2021, sort of heart of COVID, and we read it, and I reread it for the first time probably in 5 years, and loved it probably more. Which is not always the case when we reread things, but I honestly saw new depths in it. I saw things that I missed the first time, and actually it was just a really lovely experience to be with the characters and the story that, and the sort of narrative voice that I missed. I so enjoyed 5 years ago.
Maybe do you remember what your initial impressions were? And kind of where were you in life when you read it for the first time? And then how do you think that impacted you, you know, 5 or so years later?
Yeah, I can't remember exactly, but I think I was sort of just in the middle of my undergraduate studies. So this was at Oxford. And I'm a Kiwi by birth. So I was in a sort of different country, amidst a bit of a culture clash. You know, Britain is not the same country as New Zealand. So in a way, I think maybe The Remains of the Day, which for those who don't know, is about this, or set in this sort of stately house in, I think it's sort of,
it's like the 50s or something.
So in the 50s, so just after the Second World War. And it's set, I can't remember if it's in the Rate by or set, certainly the protagonist is a butler who is kind of tending to this house. And it's just got a new master, or a new sort of owner of the house, who's an American, I think. And he's sort of reflecting as he's sort of meeting this new boss and learning how he likes to do things. He's reflecting on his past, working under his former boss. And there's all
the
sorts
Lord
of
Darlington.
That's right. And there's all sorts of ideological ideas and sort of around the Second World War, which starts to come into play. But at the same time, he's also reflecting on his relationship with his father, who was the butler in the house before him, and his relationship with his father and his father's demise. So I think that's maybe resonated with where I was in my life in terms of in the middle of a culture whose manners and etiquette was quite different to what I was used to in New Zealand. And was kind of being reflected back in this book, and for those who don't know, again, Ishiguro himself was born in Japan, I think, and lived there until the age of five or so, and then moved to the UK. And so he himself was an outsider in this culture, the strange culture of manners. And so I think it's just a whole lot of interesting mirrors being held up to the societies that we're in. How are you enjoying it?
I'm really enjoying it. I think this, A, is a book that would appeal to anyone who really liked Downton Abbey or Upstairs, Downstairs, because it is being told from that, you know, downstairs servant, quote unquote, perspective. And it is at turns quite funny. You know, our butler protagonist, Mr. Stevens, reflecting on mannerisms of various people who have come and gone in the house, or even on occasion, you know, his fellow butlers and other guests and people he meets, in a way that's sometimes quite astute and sometimes quite funny, and, you know, makes fun of assumptions that everyone makes about different classes in England. And then, yeah, as you say, at times it's quite sad because he's in middle age and he's musing on his own career and his accomplishments, and essentially has he, in his position, made an impact on the world, you know, left a legacy, and kind of juxtaposing that with him witnessing his father's increasing frailty. And there's I'm not quite at the end yet. I've got like the last quarter to go. But you know, there's these hints that he's struggling with what to do with the golden years of his life and what his purpose will be when he can no longer be the great butler of dignity that he's striving to. So yeah, and as you say, Ishiguro's prose is beautiful, and it's got that kind of subtle descriptive quality where, without using too many words or having to be hyper specific about what you're seeing, it's a very evocative book, which I miss with quite a lot of contemporary literature, because this came out in, what, the early 2000s or something. So I find that, yeah, that I miss that aspect of, yeah, kind of contemporary books. So I'm
so well put.
Really enjoying it. And I think it's the sort of book that would suit anyone who's kind of stuck in a liminal space where they're not quite sure either where the world is going or where they're going.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because it is about sort of appreciating the limits of your own life. And as you say, sort of the impact you make on the world. And here's this butler who's, you know, a butler in this really quite, you know, obscure country house, who's basically serving one sort of boss, but whose behavior and the service he provides is so paramount to him and his father and the sort of legacy of butler traditions. So in a way, it's kind of, you know, on the outside, this guy's life is so insignificant, but really, like, for him and for his father, certainly, this is one of the most honored, you know, positions of honor that he could have, to serve, you know,
helping great men make their mark on the world.
Exactly.
Successfully is his mark of what to him is like being a great butler and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just, it's great. It does amazing things with perspective as well. So yeah, I think you're right.
What did your book group think of it?
From memory, I mean, this was now 5 years ago. So from memory, they all loved it. And actually we're still together as a book club. We meet Aww. Once a month or so. It's kind of crazy. I've got the rough end of the stick because we're all over the world. The way time zones work out, I have to usually get up at 6:30 a.m.
That is dedication.
Yeah. And we have actually, we sort of informally call ourselves the Kazuo Ishiguro book club, because we have done we just did The Unconsoled.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've done maybe four or five Ishiguros since we started like 6 years ago. So yeah, they loved it. And I just remember really enjoying talking about it with, you know, people and getting new sets of eyes on a book that I love.
And then what are the other ones?
The other two are On Beauty by Zadie Smith. And I remember that was another one that I suggested to my book club because I read that, I think, for the first time, like, about around the same time as The Issue Guru, to be honest. And I remember as soon as I read it, I immediately started describing it as my favorite book like in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I'd read any Zadie Smith until then, and I was just blown away. It's a campus novel set between... Have you read it?
Cool. I have not. I have read nothing by Zadie Smith. Sorry.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I'd recommend definitely. Set between, from memory, again, it's been a while, but between the UK and the US. And I love a campus novel in general. I was also on a campus at university when I first read it. So I think something just really resonated with me. It sort of explores family dynamics and sort of the pressures that are incident when you're in the midst of all these intellectuals, but also young people wanting to sort of forge their own ways and be rebellious. And yeah, I don't know. It's also based off Howards End by E.M. Forster. Mm. So it's got some parallels, which I think I enjoyed picking up because I think I just read Howards End or something. So that was my first reading, was describing it as my favorite book ever. When I reread it again for book club, maybe again, 5-6 years later, I was disappointed.
Interesting. Tell me why.
I'm not sure. I remember, I think maybe it's because I hyped it up so much in my mind. It's pretty hard to beat favorite book ever. I think it's possibly also because I was just in a different place in my life. I was back in New Zealand. I wasn't surrounded by intellectuals and that sort of like... melting pot crucible environment.
We're debating Plato until 3 a.m. with cheap cheap college yeah. wine type vibes.
Exactly. Yeah, so maybe it was that. And I think honestly this is gonna sound really superficial, but I was reading it in a copy that was not very nice. It was like, it was kind of like large print, and it had a cover that I didn't really enjoy. I bought it from a secondhand bookshop, and it was kind of like stained, and that might have had something to do with it as well, which sounds really like I'm not a true book lover if I state my book.
I think minor things such as, can you comfortably read the font of a book, or is it slightly too awkward to hold in one hand or something, can genuinely impact the reading experience. So, you know, I wouldn't totally write off that instinct.
Yeah, I don't know. So that's, and I think from memory, the book club certainly didn't love it as much as I did on first reading. But I think we had a good discussion, and some of the book club were still university environment, so that was maybe fresher for them. But yeah, I definitely recommend Zadie Smith if you've not read any of hers. She also writes pretty killer nonfiction sort of essays. She's super, super switched on. So yeah, 100% recommend.
I'm getting the sense that the books that you've gravitated to reread, maybe through book club or maybe subconsciously, are both ones where characters are between spaces. I don't know. I'm not trying to psychoanalyze you, but of the two you've named, that seemed to be a commonality.
Yeah, you're probably right. I would say the most interesting books are where people are in some sort of between space. Because if there's kind of only stasis in a character's, where a character is, it doesn't make for a great plot kind of development. You know, there's got to be some sort of change, there's got to be some sort of movement to make an interesting book for me. Now, so yeah, you're probably right.
If you had to suggest another book to book club now of what you've already read maybe in the 5 years since maybe since it was your turn, what's the book that you would name top of mind without overthinking it?
Oh, it's a really hard one. The book that recently I've bought it for a couple of people, and I've been recommending it to like lots of people, is The Safe Keep by...
Is that the one with pears on
name
it?
I can't pronounce.
Does it have pears on the cover?
Yes.
Okay.
It won, the Women's Prize last year. I think it might have got a Booker tip as well. I think, let me just find the author's name, Yael van der Voorden. I think she's Dutch, but she wrote it in English.
Mm.
And it's, have you read it?
No.
Okay, definitely recommend this one. This should be your like next book, I think. But it's set in this sort of like one house, around this one house, and it's about generational inheritance of sort of stories and trauma in a way.
Mm.
It's about, it's forensic in its kind of analysis of sort of interpersonal dynamics between a small handful of characters. It's also got very hot sex for those who are into that. So I would 100% recommend to those who haven't read it. It's pretty readily available since it won the prize last year. How about you?
I was thinking about this a lot, and I'm also a person who I don't reread a huge number of books. And again, this is in part because A, there's always so many new books that I want to read, only so many hours in a day, minimum amount of sleep I must have, work to do, bills to pay. But the books I do reread, I think I can broadly categorize into three like broader sections. One is the nostalgia reread. And those are usually books that I loved as a kid. And it's like I'm back home visiting my parents and the book is on the shelf. And you see it and you go, oh, my God, I used to love this. And you can just kind of devour it in a couple hours. So for me, that's books like The Hobbit. It's The Dark is Rising. It's a lot of those adventure stories I read as a kid. Probably The Velveteen Rabbit falls under that as well. As I had a CD audiobook version with piano by George Winton, narrated by Meryl Streep, and it is brilliant.
Wow.
It is the best, like, yeah. I need to fall asleep on an airplane, but I don't want music book. So in terms of actually reads, if we're counting audiobooks, that might be the book I've read most in my life. Thank you, Meryl Streep. And then there's, like, the comfort reread, which is a book that I would pick up not even because I want to read the whole book, but because there's one scene that I'm really in the mood for. So I'll almost like skim read to get to that scene, luxuriate in that scene, and then just kind of like skim read the rest of it. And those usually end up being romance books, like Bringing Down the Duke by Evie Dunmore, Get a Life, Chloe Brown by Talia Hibbert, Half a Soul by Olivia Atwater. Again, not super long, not hard to read. You can kind of read it half asleep at 12:30 in the morning because you're just in the mood for that. And then the last category is the one that like Watership Down falls into. And those are the ones where I might have read it as a kid, but reading it and again as an adult brings a drastically different perspective. So I go back to Watership Down, which it's like one of those books that's really hard to describe because on the surface of it, it's a book about rabbits going on a journey, trying to find a new safe place to live. The guy who wrote it, he like read a book on wild rabbit behavior and based a lot of their actual behavior on that. And he was also inspired a lot by his own experiences fighting in World War II, drawing on that plus rabbit behaviorology. And it is a really great adventure story about rabbits. Like as a kid, I loved it. I loved the kind of Odyssey nature of it. I loved Bigwig, this kind of like bogan rabbit who's really good at fighting. I liked Kahar, who you might not have met yet. Oh, you'll find out who he is. He's cool. I liked Hazel, you know, the kind of clever problem solver rabbit. And I liked the mythology, like the story, the rabbit folklore that underpins kind of all of their experiences.
Mm.
So as a kid, I just thought it was great. I was like, this is a romp. Rabbits are doing cool things. Rabbits are talking, like, amazing. And then I would have reread it maybe 10 years later. And then I went, oh, crap, this is a story about governance and the stories we tell ourselves about leadership and community. And is a not so subtle commentary about, like, why dictatorships and fascism is bad. And you'll get to more of that, I think, as you as you keep reading. But it becomes a story about why we end up becoming the stories we tell ourselves. You know, if you tell yourself a story and one of these little, you just met the weird rabbits, I think, you know, and you tell yourself a story based on your folklore mythology about why you can or can't do something, and then you end up manifesting that. And how that plays out amongst rabbit politics across warrens in an adventure setting is really, really good.
Yeah, for sure. That's really interesting. I mean, if you describe a book as about governance, it's maybe not the most gripping thing, but actually when you sort of go into it about how we define ourselves against leaders and sort of how we behave in a society and in a community. So it's really interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays out. So far, I think the leadership style has been pretty, it's been a few disagreements here and there, but it's been pretty, you know, everyone's kind of agreed with, in the end, what the path of action is going to be. But I'm sure it's going to change, yeah.
Yes, they're about to realize, at the point you're at, they're about to realize their main problem. And the way they go about trying to solve it will underpin the rest of the book.
I'm getting the impression that you like to reread books that are about rabbits.
Oh, that's right. I have to. That's fair enough. I should have drawn that conclusion. Yeah. Funny. I never had a rabbit growing up. My cousin did, but I guess I like their symbolism in a way. You know, normally pacifist animals that we kind of think of as pests, but live in these apparently surprisingly complex, semi-harmonious groups. Maybe it won't surprise you to say that I was also a big Warrior Cats reader when I was a kid. Again, clans.
It's a Warrior Cat.
Oh, there's like a million books in this series now, but the fundamental premise is very similar. There's four cat clans: Thunder Clan, Shadow Clan, River Clan, and one more whose name I'm spacing on, and I'm showing myself a bad fan. And this kitty pet, aka a domestic cat, escapes and kind of gets himself into one of these clans, and they're basically all like striving for survival in the wilds. And there's a cat religion with Star Clan, and leaders have nine lives, and there's a million spin-off books of Warrior Cats. It definitely is a very good, like, middle grade book, I would say.
I left a loose thread hanging because I said I've reread three books.
And what's the third one?
I get my third book. Okay, it's one that I read for another book club, not my normal book club, but for I think it's called Wellington Classics Book Club or something. I've only been to it once or twice. And we met in the Alps. For those Wellingtonians listening, it's in the library bar on upstairs on Courtney Place. It's literally just got book-lined walls, and we all gathered to read Dostoevsky's The Idiot, which for me was, I think I read it, the first time I read it, I was actually in Russia, incredibly. I was there teaching English that must have been summer of 2018 or something.
And were you consciously reading Russian literature while in Russia?
I think I bought it with knowing that it wouldn't be cool to read just like this like masterpiece of Russian literature. While I remember one instance, I was rereading it for the first time, rather, by a lake in St. Petersburg, and it was like summer, and like the like deer roaming around for some reason. It was just like, this is crazy.
Sounds idyllic.
Anyway, I loved it. the first time.
Mm.
It's all about, I mean, it's got lots of sort of religious themes, which I like, being a theology person. It's also super, I don't know, it just interrogates what it means to be a person, a human being. It's also got a lot of drama and scandal.
What about hot sex?
I think Dostoevsky kind of like pans away when there's ever sex. But
fade to black. Okay.
You know,
fade
to black. There's some stuff going on. yeah, and it's kind of just like about the sort of class divides in Russian society in I think it's the early 19th century, and the sort of French influences against the sort of Russian lower classes and the aristocracy. And yeah, I loved it. Anyway, we read it for book club earlier this year, I think.
Mm.
And loved it all over again. I still have the same copy, which was actually signed by the Russian family that I was staying with, all like five of them, including the sort of like six-year-old boy.
Aww.
And I went through the whole sort of nostalgia experience of just reading that copy again. I'd also annotated it.
Oh, interesting. Sort of like
put underlines and sort of notes in the margin, which I really enjoyed coming across again. So yeah, 10 out of 10 rereading experience.
Did you agree with anything past Fraser had noted?
Yeah, I think so. I remember like liking having my attention drawn to certain things, which obviously you don't get if you're just reading a blank copy. I didn't think I was like making any profound points in my annotations. It was more like, oh, that's interesting, or like, haha, that's a funny thing that happened. So yeah, just kind of like, it was nice to be kind of in dialogue in a loose kind of way with my old self.
Did you add any new annotations?
I did, and I used a different color pen.
Good.
So when I reread for the third time, I'll be in conversation with two phrases past.
I do like that, and I'm not usually an annotate in my books type person, with the exception of academic books. I will annotate my textbooks, but not my for pleasure books. And I do feel like for the books that I do know I often reread, it could be quite interesting to consciously make an effort to do that and see how point you may, even if you like the same lines 5 years later, or the find yourself drawn to the same characters.
Have you done an episode on annotation? I feel like that's going to be quite a good one.
I think it'd be quite a controversial one.
Yeah.
But
some people, like, it's like a heresy to touch a book with a pen or a marker.
Mm.
But I'm coming around to it. Obviously your own book.
Yes, yeah, like, yes, yes. No, if you damage a book that you've borrowed from someone, there's a special realm in the depths of hell for you. And I do know if it's a book that I know that I'll want to eventually give on or either gift to someone or know that I'll want to donate it, I do try and keep it in very good condition because I want whoever the next person is who gets it or buys it to have a book in, you know, like new state.
Although, I mean, at the risk of this turning into an episode on annotation,
let's go.
When I get a book out of the library and it's got markings in it from a previous reader, I quite like that. I quite like seeing like the odd word sort of in the margin or something underlined, or like an exclamation mark. And I like trying to piece together the kind of person who
would have done that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't quite had that pleasure. I do enjoy it when I go to like a little free library and you swap a book in and the book that you get has something tucked in the pages. So I've done this anecdote before on like a much earlier episode, but I think it bears rereading, re-saying. But in the copy of the Luminaries I got from the Little Free Library, there's a note tucked in at about 100 pages saying, now you are entering the black hole. and I've left that there, and I still haven't finished the Luminaries 5 years later. So I do need to commit to, I want to commit to that. But the most recent book I got from a free library, which I haven't yet read, was a copy of Sally Rooney's Beautiful World, Where Are You?, which has been on my list. And I was flipping through it, and out popped a Polaroid shot of the tea house in Miyazu Gardens here in Nelson. Oh. So I don't know if the person who had this either forgot that they popped a Polaroid in there or if that was a little gift for whoever got the book next. But yeah, like you, I was quite charmed. I was like, oh, a bonus. How nice.
Yeah. And like very on brand for like Sally Rooney. A Polaroid is very like sort of sort of, I don't know, millennial kind of
aesthetic vibe.
Aesthetic, yeah.
Yes, I do love a Polaroid. I do love a Polaroid camera. I was trying to think of the other kind of rereads that I've had my relationship with evolve over time. And the one that I know you've also read is Pride and Prejudice. Also a book I read as a kid. We used to watch the 6-hour BBC adaptation in the marathon car rides between Chicago and Nebagamon, Wisconsin, which is about 8 hours. So, you know, between your 2 days, you can get the entirety of Pride and Prejudice watched. But again, as a kid, I think I just liked the main plot points. You know, Mrs. Bennet is ridiculous, and what are Elizabeth and Darcy doing? And of course, Kitty and Lydia are equally hilarious. And again, it's reading it as you get older, you realize more of the nuances between the class distinctions and the kind of social commentary that's happening that Jane Austen is making. Because as a kid, you don't really understand what's quote unquote wrong with the Bennet family, you know. And even if you watch any of the movies or adaptations as a kid, you're like, their house looks really giant and they're all wearing these beautiful dresses. And I'm like, I don't get it. They seem perfectly well off. But you don't come to understand why it's such a problem that there's, you know, all of these sisters in this family on the brink of becoming destitute until you're much older. So yeah, every time I reread it, I find her very funny and witty.
I was going to say, and how much Mr. Collins, the sort of classical priest figure, how like when, you know, his offer, he makes his offer in a sort of roundabout way. The mother, Mrs. Bennet, I think so wants, the main character's name.
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth to accept, and because it would mean getting a daughter married and sort of, you know, looked after. But in, you know, when you're encountering this character in the modern day, it's Mr. Collins, like, who the hell would think about spending the rest of your life with him? Like, what a joke.
Yes.
So yeah, it's, you're right, that does change in different times.
No, when you are a kid and Elizabeth's friend eventually, you know, kind of basically consoles him and ends up marrying him. And as a kid, you're like, oh my God, why would you do that? He's so horrible. And then when you get older, you're like, oh, I understand why you made this decision for your long-term financial well-being and survival. So the constraints on the choices everyone is making and become much more apparent. Anyways.
I actually read Pride and Prejudice way too young, and I have not reread it. I read it for as a set text in year 10, which was when I was about 14.
Oh, that would not have appealed to a 14-year-old boy, I imagine.
No, and it was an all-boys year group.
Oh, God, bold choice.
Just like, I remember thinking, why the hell are we reading this? What's this about? I get that this is famous and whatever, but like, how boring.
Oh, you mean you weren't taking lessons on how to be a proper gentleman, a proper romantic gentleman from Mr. Darcy?
Well, maybe I was taking it from Mr. Collins. I don't know. But I think I definitely need to reread. I mean, the first reading can even be considered a reading when I was 14. I was kind of like reluctantly forcing my way through it. But I have also fallen in love with the, I think it's not the BBC, it's the sort of movie length.
The Keira Knightley one?
The Keira Knightley one with the guy from Succession.
Yes, Matthew. His name is Matthew.
The Matthew, like, yes. Matthew actor.
Yes.
I think I definitely need to properly reread it to properly appreciate it.
It's a good point, though, actually, because there's quite a few books that I know would have been in my grade school or high school curriculum that, you know, would have been read under obligation, if not duress, at the time, that actually would be quite interesting to voluntarily reread them and see what else you'd get out of it. I mean, whatever Shakespeare you read in high school would probably fall in that category. Though admittedly, we read King Lear, and I did quite like King Lear even then. But other, you know, all the other classics, like The Grapes of Wrath by Steinbeck, or The Great Gatsby, I think, is one that's on every American high school curricula. There would be others that would probably, other things they carried. That's another, you know, Korean War story, very magical realism-y, very trippy, would probably merit a reread. I have read L'Étranger in French and English, both for class, but that could merit a reread.
Catcher in the Rye is a classic, I imagine, especially in the States.
It is. I have never read it, actually. But yes, that is one of those like quintessential coming of age Bildungsroman like required reading. Though I know you have strong feelings on is any reading required?
Yeah. Wait, what are you referring to? You mean Pride and Prejudice?
Or? No, one of the posts you had about all the classic books that you hadn't read and weren't feeling pressured into reading, which I respect.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. No, I just did it. I did a post because I think there's a lot of pressure online, or at least in the Bookstagram community, of like someone posts a book that's like seems so classic and you've not read it, and it can kind of be embarrassing, or you know, you can feel like ashamed of not having read it, which is just so ridiculous given the
breadth of great books there are out there.
Exactly. And the finite span of our lives. So to be ashamed for not having read a book, I think it's just so ridiculous. So yeah, I just like highlighted all the famous, well-known books that I've never read to try and, I don't know, counteract that.
Counter the narrative. I mean, yeah. Fair enough. I feel like half of my time, particularly when talking to the people who love books, is me going, oh my God, have you read this? And they go, no, but have you read this? And I go, no. And we just go back and forth on books that either of us haven't read.
Yeah, for sure.
Any final thoughts from you on rereading? Merits, demerits, changes in perspective?
I often have like hang-ups about reading behaviors or like things I should be doing more of, things I should be doing less of. And I think in most cases it's like those are unhelpful. And like, I should just be reading what I want to read and what starts good conversations with other people. I think that's like one of the main reasons I love reading is because of the conversations those books could spark. In this instance, I should be comfortable with this kind of imperative, which is that I think I should be more comfortable rereading because, if it's a book that you genuinely love, you may already know what's going to happen. You probably know what's going to happen. But it's the experience of being with a work of art that you enjoy. And why would you limit yourself to only doing that once in your life? It's like, would I only eat lasagna once because I know what lasagna tastes like? Lasagna is like one of my favorite foods.
Great food.
Which is ridiculous. So, I mean, I guess eating lasagna doesn't take as long as reading The Rays of the Day does, but I think I should be rereading more of my favorite books. For example, I just lent my copy, actually, of Austerlitz by Sebald, W.B. Sebald, I think the initials are. Which is one of my favorite all-time books. And she has just finished it and has just said, like, wow, we need to talk about this book because she loved it as well, clearly. But it's been a few years since I read it, and I'm going to feel like our conversations, I'm going to be saying, like, oh, yeah, I vaguely remember that. So I should just be rereading Austerlitz to be able to sit with something I love again.
And then have a good conversation about it.
Exactly.
That sounds perfect. So before I wrap us up, here is a bookmark to close us off, and that is two book events have been announced for the 2026 Nelson Arts Festival so far. The first is with Witi'ihi Maera Smiler about his new memoir, Te Kai Kaukau, The Swimmer. And another is with Booker Prize-winning Sri Lankan author Shehan Karunatilaka. And you can already get your tickets for these at nelsonartsfestival.nz. So that's all for today. I'm at Accidental Tokyoite online, always happy to chat books. And you can catch up with Fraser at turns_of_phrase with a Z. Thanks for listening and being a little bit booked.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast by Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.co.nz, for our contact details.